This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
I don't think anyone would dare say that the criminal justice system in Malaysia is 100% perfect. So things are can happen simply because the rules are man-made, the courts are manned by people, and we are all subject to making errors. My only question and the issue of importance is whether or not these errors are actually found out and whether they are corrected in time. Perhaps an error is not detected and is confirmed by the highest court. If there's a death penalty and the death penalty is carried out, then that is irreversible. As for reviews, the reviews in the federal court of its own decisions are few and far in between. In any event, reviews are always, more often than not, limited to questions of law. And so it is actually quite limited in its purpose.
Good afternoon, this is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. In 2004, Mainthan Arumugam was arrested and later convicted for the death of a man who, years later, was found to be still alive. Bizarre. That's not the end of it. He remains on death row with all of his appeals having been thrown out of the courts, despite this fresh new evidence coming forth after his conviction. It was World Day Against the Death Penalty on the 10th of October, and in conjunction with that, the Freedom Film Fest will be re-releasing a film titled Menunggu Masa, or Waiting for Time, which highlights how a miscarriage of justice is just one of the reasons why the death penalty must be repealed. So the filmmaking duo behind the documentary, Sarah Sasha Abubakar and Sherry Razadali, join me now to share more. They are both also lawyers. Welcome, ladies. How are you today?
Hello. Hi, inviting us.
Always a pleasure. So we caught up, you know, just a few months ago, you know, we were talking about No Silver Lining, the Perak crisis. And this is another one of the films under your brand, Exploited, right? It's you know, it's another powerful documentary, another short, it was what, only just over 20 minutes, but it highlighted this very strange case. And, you know, I was trying to explain this case to my husband after I watched your film and, you know, all the reading I did. And he just looked at me and said, surely you've got something wrong because it's so bizarre. Can we start from the beginning? I mean, can you tell us what led to the arrest of Mainthan? You know, what was he accused of? All of that.
So Mainthan was charged for murder with three other individuals. The case is very slightly complex because he was charged for murder over the death of a victim in the charge sheet Mani Vanan, right? Mm-hmm. So there was dead bodies, body parts were found. Mainthan, in his defense, claims that he didn't murder anyone. He assaulted a person called Devdas. And this was raised at a trial in the High Court. And he consistently maintained this. But they couldn't locate Devdas during the trial because he disappeared. So even at the Court of Appeal stage, even at the federal court level, and even at the first review hearing, but subsequently, Devdas turned up at Mainthan's mother's funeral.
Okay.
So, and Devdas filed an SD, which Amir Hamzah was the lawyer on record at the time, filed the second review with this evidence, which consistent with what Mainthan has defended since at the beginning of the trial, that there was no one else at the crime scene except for him being assaulted by Mainthan. Despite with this new evidence, at the second review hearing, the federal court dismissed the review application.
Okay, so who was he actually accused of murdering Mainthan? Was it
on the charge sheet? It was Mani Vanan.
That's right, and we don't know who this Mani Vanan is, right? Because I think that, I mean, his name was Mani Vanan Anak Lelaki something, but his passport, if I'm correct, was an Indian national's passport, which doesn't make sense because that's not a naming convention in India. I mean, what are some of the other weird sort of discrepancies that came up in this case?
Because even with the DNA evidence, when they tested, a different name came out, which is Kalidas, right? Even And the immigration report, it was a female on the report. It's all in the record of appeal. We're not making this up. You know, so much doubt, so much questions over the case. When Maithan raised it, even you can see on in the grounds of High Court that the court claimed that Maithan's defense of this Devadas character is a fictional character and an afterthought by Maithan because they couldn't locate Devadas. So, yeah, that's so many bizarre things that happened in the case, and yet Maithan is still languishing in on death row for over 17 years at the moment.
Oh gosh, that's crazy. And just take me back to you know, when it all first started, right? He was not the only one who was arrested. There were three other suspects, so four of them. And if I'm correct, the prosecution largely built their case on evidence of two witnesses who claimed that they saw a bloodied person on Maithan's workshop floor the night before, you know, these body parts were discovered, right? But the other three, they had their convictions overturned on appeal. Only Maithan's was upheld.
Yeah, which is true. The body parts were found at a different location, not at a crime scene, on a different day. And the three other accused, which some of them supported what Maithan's defense was, were acquitted at federal court. And, you know, only Maithan now is on death row to answer over the original charge sheet, which is over murder of this Manimanin.
Okay. All right. And Amir Hamza, who began representing Maithan, I think that was in 2014, right? And I mean, he saw so many unanswered questions as well, right? Which is why he wanted to take on this this case as well. I mean, like, to talk to me about, you know, the sort of things that he did to sort of, you know, try and appeal the conviction and all those sorts of things.
What he did? Well, basically, he filed a review after Maithan's last appeal, which is at the federal court. So federal court is basically your last stage if you want to appeal for any conviction.
Sure.
So there is still another special stage that you can go for, which is a review, the review application. But for a review application, for you to succeed, for you to even file that application, you must show that there is a special circumstances that warrant a filing of the review. Because the filing of the review, you can't just file it sesuka hati, you know, like if you want to, you know. You have to satisfy certain criteria. So Ami felt, and well, if you look at the case also, I think any reasonable man would feel that there is a special circumstances that would warrant filing the review. So he filed the first review. That was rejected. The first review was, if I'm not mistaken, was on the identity. Sherry, was on the identity of the victim. And then the second, that was dismissed. So after that was dismissed, and after Devadas also appeared, and then Devadas even signed the statutory declaration, that makes it more stronger to file the review at the federal court. So Amir went and, what do you call that, filed the second review. He even in the affidavit to support the application, he even say that, look, you know, if this appeal is allowed, Devadas, the alleged person that Maithan murdered that night, is actually outside the courtroom, or he is ready to come to court to testify, able and ready to come and testify. So that will warrant a very special circumstances to allow the first stage of filing the review, which is to allow me or to allow Maithan to file the review. So whether the review succeed or not is at the second stage, right? Mm-hmm. Because earlier I mentioned that review is a very, very difficult thing to file. So he felt, and we also feel, that with Devadas SD, it was a very, very strong ground to allow Maithan to file the review. Unfortunately, the federal court judges did not agree and the review was dismissed.
Okay. And I know you guys weren't directly involved in the case, but you were, of course, observing what was happening and all of that, right? I mean, how did, were you surprised? How did you guys feel about, you know, the federal court throwing out that the review?
We were quite surprised because actually, Devadas was in the courtroom on the day of the second review hearing. So
he was literally there.
Yes. So we were quite disappointed, but it's beyond our hands. Like, we couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know if this is something that you guys can answer, but I mean, do the judges have to give a reason why they, you know, are choosing to not take into account this new evidence?
Well, in any trial, civil or criminal, whenever a judge makes the decision, he has to prepare the grounds of judgment to say how he came up with such decision. So in his grounds of judgment, he would say, I have considered this evidence. I have considered this evidence. He can say that I believe that this evidence support the contention. Or he can say, I don't believe, you know, this evidence support this particular contention. But for this second review, there were no grounds given. So what we recall, what they said was, if they allowed this review, the second review, it would open a floodgate to other review application. Okay. So bearing in mind that earlier I said that a review application is very, very hard to get or hard to do unless you can justify it. Okay. And the justification must be a very strong justification. So in this case, we felt, as I'm sure Army felt, the justification is very strong. So when it was dismissed, I suppose it was very disappointing, but at the same time also, there was no cogent or logical reason given, or logical grounds given by the judges to say why we are dismissing this review. I suppose if someone wrote the judgment and we know what was the reason, then I guess we can consider back whether what we felt is a strong justification. It's actually a strong or a very weak justification in the eyes of the law, according to the threshold for the review application. But in this case, that was what they said. We are not opening the floodgate for other review application if we allow your application.
I don't know what to make of that. It doesn't make... I think this is why my husband thought I was illogical. It doesn't make sense to me, but... Okay, all right. We'll just go for a quick break and then we'll come back and talk about, you know, Mainten and his family and, of course, the film that you made about them. I'm speaking today to Sarah Sasha Abubakar and Sherry Razak Dali. They are both lawyers. They are also the filmmakers of the film Menunggu Masa or Waiting for Time. They're also part of Exploited together. They run Exploited. And we're talking about the film. We're going to come back after this quick break. Keep it right here on Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Saya harap tahun depan saya dan keluarga akan bersama dengan dia.
Saya terpenat tengok dia gaduh. Dia menjaga air pun baik, semua dia baik. Tapi tak pernah saya tengok dia gaduh ke apa ke, saya terpenat. Setakat itu, itulah saya masih suka sama dia. Bukan saya benci sama dia. Saya tak benci. Saya tunggu suami saya. Harap ini tahun saya akan dapat jawapan. Mana tahu Agung akan bagi dia bebas ke? Kena bulan 12 dia biar jadi.
I've been doing criminal cases since my early days in practice. On a personal level, I believe that death penalty should be abolished. I don't think death penalty is really an effective way to deter crime. I'm a proponent for rehabilitation rather than punishing someone.
Welcome back. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Joining me on the line today are Sherry Razak Dali and Sarah Sasha Abubakar. They are both lawyers. They are the filmmaking duo Exploited. Together, they make lots of really wonderful documentary films. And the one that we're talking about today is called Menunggu Masa or Waiting for Time, which follows the very bizarre case involving Mainten Arumugam, who was convicted of the death of a man who, you know, was later found to be alive. But as it stands, you know, as you guys explained, the new evidence was not allowed, and Mainten is still on death row even today, even as we speak, right?
Yeah.
And Talk to me about the film that you guys wanted to make. I mean, I think suffice to say you're both against the death penalty.
Yes.
Is that one of the reasons why you also wanted to focus on, you know, all this case, you know, which is so inconsistent and, you know, there's so many unanswered questions and you know, put that into a film as well to sort of explain why the death penalty is really not a way to go?
Yes, because Maiten's case is one of the cases that we felt like it could be on the basis of miscarriage of justice. And we don't know how many others are out there, especially for death penalty cases. And most of those who are on death row are either poor, lack of education, and wouldn't know any better about their rights and their legal rights and all that. So,
or maybe didn't have access to sort of like the best legal defense, right?
Yeah, or just pure bad luck. You know, like looking at Maiten, so many stages, and yet to see where he is now, it's sad. Yeah.
To put it mildly. And I mean, the Malaysian government is observing a moratorium on executions, am I right?
Correct.
And Maiten, along with other death row inmates, I guess they will not be hanged, but they are sort of living in this limbo, am I correct? Just like no certainty, no nothing?
Yes, correct.
Okay, all right. So the film, which is, again, I mentioned, you know, very powerful, very short film, but it follows, of course, his family, right? But when he was put into jail, like, I think his children were aged between 1 to 4 years old, and you know, they've basically not known their dad at all, right?
Yes.
And you show a lot of what's happening in their home life. Can you tell us a little bit about the family and the situation at home for them?
It's tough. It's tough. When we start filming the documentary, we met one of his daughter, Aguila. Aguila was only 1 year old when Maiten, you know, went to jail. She spoke about how she has no father figure while growing up. Sure, she has a mom, but she felt that, you know, having a parent, father and mother, is better for her. Even from the movie also, you can see that when she grows up, she wants to be a lawyer so that, you know, she can defend a case like her father's, you know. But we also met the other children, the brother, and then the elder sister. Things are tough, lah, at home, you know, without a father, and then visiting him almost every month or every week if they can, you know. And it's not even possible because they need to incur the cost to go see him, you know, spend some time with him. Time or cost that they actually need to, what do you call that, to sustain mm-hmm. their life also lah, because the mom is the only breadwinner for the family, and she has like 4 children, yeah, to take care of. But other than that, they are actually okay. They are doing okay. But when you talk about the case, or it's just not normal lah, the family, you know, having that kind of situation for them.
And then they are living in a house with 2 other families. Mm-hmm. So they were sharing, if you look at the documentary, the condition of the house already, as it is, it's small, it's in a bad condition. It will flood every time whenever it's rain.
Heavy rain, yeah, you know, the floor, you know, you can't put carpet or whatever because the water will seep in. Mm-hmm. And you've seen in the documentary when she was reading the letter, it was in the bedroom. That's where all of them shared the bedroom. You have mm-hmm. the double-decker bed. That's where they all sleep. They all sleep there.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. the condition is bad. And it's like they live in an area where recycle area or garbage recyclable area. So the condition of the house, before this, the wife was also taking care of Maiten's parents even, but then they passed away. So that's the condition that they were living with.
And I mean, I watched the documentary and I can see it's just like a stone's throw away from a very busy highway, and but, you know, and I think, I don't know if this was something that you were also trying to show in the film, like the children are very sweet. You know, the wife is also a really lovely lady. You know, just, you know, kind of just like getting on with it. You know, you see them all cooking together, you know, simple dishes. I mean, it was nice to see those things. They're just making the best of a really, really horrible situation. Yeah,
that's right.
If you see the documentary, you can see how lovingly they speak about their father, despite not living with him for many years, and the respect that they have for their father, the love, the care. And they're good kids, you know, like they go to school properly despite not having much on their end. And the respect that they have for their mother and the care. So it's very humbling to see with their condition that they're living in and how well they're being brought up by this single mom, not having the husband around and in prison, right?
Yeah. And she had to take, I mean, she had not worked, you know, prior to his going to jail, and she had to find a job. She's a cleaner in a school, all of that, right? She had to take all of that on. And now you say she'd look after her in-laws as well and the children. Yeah. Wow. Okay. How did you actually approach them to make this film? You know, were they quite, you know, welcoming of you telling this story for them?
Initially, it was a bit hard because I suppose they were shy. Plus, you don't know them. Plus, we never part of their community, so to speak, because here come these two Malay girls, you know, into their community, wanted to tell their story, you know. It's not something that they are used to because they are not used to talking about the case, talking about their situation, all right? And then we came in, but lucky for us, we had someone who connects us with them.
Okay.
So they trust this particular person because this particular person have been helping them and also have been helping Maizen, you know, going to court or getting things done easier for them to communicate with Maizen. So they trust this person. So when this person bring both of us in and say like, hey, you know, come meet my friend, you know, they want to tell your story. We want to tell your story to the world, you know, how all these injustices happen. So they slowly warm up to us. So we didn't really bring our camera. Or no, we did any interview or did any recording the first, second or three times, in fact, when we see them at their house there, okay? So once they already warm up, then that's when we're like, hey, here's the camera.
You know? Ease them into it.
Yeah. So they did quite okay after that. And in fact, even after finish filming, we still keep in touch, you know? The Aguila, the youngest, who was really shy, has become more vocal now, you know?
All right. So, I mean, it's nice that you guys have kept in touch. Do you know, like, what they're up to at the moment? I'm guessing they're still hoping for a pardon for their father. I guess that's the only thing they can do at the moment, right? With regard to the case, of course.
We do. Like what Sarah said earlier, right? When we first met them, when we asked them a question, they could only answer yes, no, or they couldn't. I mean, they're not used to people like us coming in and asking their feelings, asking about their day and their situation, right? But we can tell you from now, they are comfortable to advocate for their own cause, and they're comfortable speaking to reporters, to people asking a question about facts of the case. We do keep in touch. Two of the kids are in college.
That's great.
Studying and I think the youngest is doing SPM currently. We give them books, sometimes check on them for groceries, especially with the MCO and all that. So, you know, it's hard for them, but we do ask around whenever, you know, if they need anything to reach out, you know. So, yeah, we do keep in touch.
Okay. I mean, that's lovely to hear. And I'm glad that they are, you know, they found their voice as well and now they can advocate. I mean, there's nothing stronger than they themselves saying it, right? I guess, you know, that's also what you wanted with this film, you know, you wanted it as an advocacy tool for people to get to know Maizen's story, to promote the abolition of the death penalty. And I think you interviewed members of the legal fraternity, right? So there was Datuk Ma, there was also Amir Hamza, of course. I mean, how did they feel? You know, what was their reaction to this case? You know, what were some of the insights that they provided in this film?
Well, we spoke to Datuk Ma, who was the former Suhakam members. Okay, and then if you know Suhakam also their position is to abolish the death penalty in Malaysia also lah. Mm-hmm. So when we heard about his story, again, I suppose because he also is a former judge also, right?
That's
he
right.
also appalled by the facts of the case and how it had turned out. But I suppose with his background as a judge, he knows how the judge have to decide the case also. So he said that the law is the law. So, you know, if they feel that they wanted to, they feel that the evidence is compelling enough, they have to pass the death penalty. So that there's no discretion for them to pass the death penalty. Unlike Singapore position, for instance, you know, where they are moving towards giving the discretion to the judge whether to pass the death penalty or not. All right?
Yep.
But yeah, in this case, I suppose the majority, well, we didn't, based on our years of trying to advocate for the abolishment of the death penalty, I think more and more people are in favor of abolishing it instead of retaining it, because I think part of the reason is because you don't see that the death penalty is actually deterring people from committing crime. Yeah. So why keep it? You know, it's so old and it serves no purpose at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's something Amir as well said in the film, that, you know, he's more for rehabilitation, isn't it? Because it's been proven, like you said, that you know, putting people on death penalty, killing them, serves no purpose. It is definitely not a deterrent to crime.
Especially in a situation where there is a miscarriage of justice. And if you had hanged that person and evidence would surface later that, you know, he is not the person who committed the crime, how do you undo the hanging?
Yeah.
You know? So it's different, like, if you have to pay your fine, for instance, like, you committed a crime, for instance, and you have to pay a fine, say, 10,000 ringgit. And then later it transpired that, hey, you know, you did not commit the crime. Actually, you know, it was someone else. So you can file for compensation, you know, get back your money. But, you know, get back your money and above more, ask for other damages, you know, for all the mental anguish that you have to go through. But when it comes to death penalty and then you hang that person, because the law says you have to hang this person because he committed a certain crime. And then later you found out, or the so-called witness themselves come forward and say that, no, he didn't kill me, I'm still alive. How do you unhang the person that you have hanged? It's, you know, it's difficult that way to retain the death penalty.
Mm-hmm. Sherry, how do you feel about the death penalty?
Exactly. Like what Sarah said, it's an irreversible impact on the accused person if found innocent. So that is the fear of the death penalty that we feel. Because you can't, I mean, it's state-sanctioned killing.
It's a final, isn't it? There's
yes,
no going back.
Final. Yeah, no money can, as much as they are against the act of murder, but if you're executing an innocent person, how do you compensate that as well, right? Yeah, that's how we feel.
Okay, all right. And when this film came out, which was about three years ago, right? 2018? Am I correct? Yeah. What was the reaction to the film? I'm very certain people didn't know about this case. And I'm sure. Yeah. I mean, they must have been as shocked as, you know, all of us, myself and my husband, who honestly thought I'm talking rubbish.
It shocked a lot of people because we've screened it in Brussels. We've screened it, I think, in Taiwan, in the parliament as well. And we managed, after screening the film in parliament, I think twice, we managed to convince some of the MPs and they were questioning as well, how is this possible? You know, you have this person and I think they've raised Maiten's case a few times already in parliament. I believe it's on Hansard. You can find it on Hansard. But that's where it's shocking, right?
Yeah.
But we wish to have this conversation keeps on going, you know, to help Maiten. Otherwise, like the title, he's waiting for time, either for execution or to be released. What is there other options for him? Because, you know, we're trying our best to see what we can do. Even with so many doubts, so many questions in the case, he has been, you know, sentenced
for death, and already on 17 years on death row, is living in isolation next to the execution chamber in Panjang Prison. That's where they will put the Banduan Akhir.
That's what I wanted to ask. Why was he being kept in solitary confinement, which I think only allows them release 1 hour a day? Is it purely because he's on death row?
For death row inmates, that's where they will place them.
But if there's a moratorium, I mean, surely...
Just on execution.
Just on execution.
Where they place them, the jail cell, is near the execution chamber. So you can actually hear every time a person being executed. So okay.
Prison reforms is just another discussion for
another day. Yes. And that's what a lot of people don't know. And the conversation needs to happen. So that's where that's the purpose of the documentary, to have the conversation as well for cases like my thing.
Okay. All right. And I mean, there's been a lot of, I don't know if I'm right in saying a lot, but there has been publicity since the film came out. And obviously we're trying, of course, to keep that story going. But as it stands, basically, Mainthan is just waiting to see if he can get a pardon from either the Sultan or the Agong. Is that basically his last sort of, I suppose, redemption or way of getting out of this?
Yes, as well. But we're still working on the case.
Okay.
There's nothing filed at the moment, but we're still working to help him where we can, you know. But the other part is, if you want to support, you can support the clemency petition to the Sultan of Selangor, where he has filed his petition. You know,
how does one do that?
To write to the Pardons Board.
Okay.
Yeah, for Mainthan. So you can contact us if you're interested to assist. Or contact the Freedom Film Network, where the film is being produced by.
Sure.
And find us and keep in touch if you want to help.
Okay. All right. I guess, you know, before I let you go, any last message that you'd like to leave us with, you know, with regard to, you know, death penalty or Mainthan's case? Any final thoughts you'd like to share?
Keep the conversation going to abolish the death penalty. Me and Sherry have actually seen the trend. When 10 years ago or 15 years ago, when we start to advocate for the abolishment of the death penalty, that the public opinion have swayed a bit towards abolishing.
Okay.
So back then, 10, 15 years ago, it's such a taboo to talk about death penalty. You can't even say the word death penalty. People will think that you're a communist or something, you know, because it's such a bad word to say. So fast forward now, or 2-3 years ago, the trend is to now be able to talk about it. Don't worry about the position, whether you agree or not, but talk about it. That's where slowly the reform will come in.
You may agree with this or not on to abolish the death penalty, but what we're hoping is at least watch the documentary, talk about it. Whether you agree or not, there is possibility of cases like Mainthan happening, and it is happening and has happened. So have that conversation and see how you can respond after that. But we wish to abolish the death penalty.
Yeah. I think the scary thing is like, okay, so we know Mainthan's case, right? But there are probably so many others that we don't know about. And unfortunately, I think, you know, from research across the world, we can, and in Malaysia as well, it's usually the most marginalized communities who are, you know, facing these situations as well. Because as we, you know, discussed earlier, a lack of access to maybe they don't even understand what's happening to them. There have been, you know, examples of confessions being tortured out of them. So there's so many different things, right? So it's something that we should all think about in terms of a human rights perspective. Thank you both of you so much for joining me today. I've been speaking to Sarah Sasha Abubakar and Sherry Razak Dali. They're both lawyers. They also made the film Menunggu Masa or Waiting for Time, which is being re-released this weekend on the Freedom Film Fest YouTube channel. Do watch it. It's in conjunction with World Day Against the Death Penalty, which was on the 10th of October. Do watch it and do get in touch with Sherry and Sarah, you know, if you want to plead for clemency, you know, for Mindthin's case. And, you know, if you're interested to find out more. And if you miss any part of today's interview or any previous Live and Learn interviews, you can always download the podcast at bfm.my/learn, or you can find it on the BFM app. This has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
What do you hope to do after SPM? Oh, after SPM, I want to look for a part-time job because I don't want to make my mom trouble. And then I think I want to study for law, but it depends on my result, right? I like to become a lawyer, and then, like my father's case, right, it's getting in the trouble, so I want to be a good lawyer and help the others.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.